Do-do-do-do.
Loggeria.
Welcome to Loggeria, the arts entertainment podcast where we word vomit about music, movies, television shows, and today, books. My name's Clark Hubbard.
My name is Katie Chappell.
And our numbers are dwindling, Katie.
I'm not exactly sure what's going on.
We're not sure.
Either a serial killer is taking us down one by one, and Clark and I are the last ones left. To be honest, it's probably Clark.
It probably will be. The Loggeria killer.
If no one sees me after this, Clark probably killed me.
To save myself, though, to be fair, it wasn't just a random murder.
Oh.
I mean, like, I wouldn't do that to you, Katie.
Oh, okay. Is that what you're saying? Because you're talking about it like it's already happened, which is slightly ominous.
No. It's in the future. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, okay.
I will
cool
use you to save myself. That's all I'm saying here.
That's fair, I guess.
Yeah.
I would use me to save you too, Clark.
Oh, thank you so much, Katie. Anyways, both Corey Adams and Liz Caldwell are out today. Their phones, they're not answering them, so that means that they might be done in by the Loggeria killer.
Mm-hmm.
We will update you next week. But regardless, today, it's just Katie Chappell and I in the studio. How do you feel about that, Katie?
Honestly, dream team. Am I right?
It's a dream team.
Yeah.
There's a good vibe in this studio today.
Yeah.
And maybe because it's only 11:23 in the morning and I'm still feeling spunky, but it's a good feeling for sure.
Clark stops feeling spunky at around 2 p.m. So
2 p.m. is the spunk max. That's what I call it.
I
just hit that and my spunk goes boom, just all the way down.
This is fun. I like this conversation.
Yeah, it's a good conversation. Mm-hmm. We just got to get people invested in the show before we start talking about the boring stuff.
By talking about spunk.
Yeah. This episode is brought to you by Spunk, trademark pending. Katie, what movie would you like to talk about today?
I think I'm going to talk about Aquaman, not because I liked it, but because I didn't like it.
Ooh, plot twist.
Fun. Ah, yeah. I saw it over winter break, and honestly, the highlight of the movie was Willem Dafoe, isn't it?
What?
Yeah, I know. And I mean, honestly, when Willem, I can never say it. His name
His
is William.
His parents did not like him. Can we just discuss that?
They named him William, and he changed it to Willem.
Oh, so he just doesn't like himself.
Yes.
That's like if your name was Mark, but then you were like, no, it's just Merck. No, you just took out just, that random
yeah,
vowel.
Changed the letter.
M-R-K. Yeah. Wouldn't really work.
So
who does he play?
I don't even really know how to describe it. It's like he's the fun uncle guardian.
The fun uncle
pretend.
To Aquaman.
Yeah, except that he tells him a lot of lies, but then is like still good in the end.
So still the fun uncle.
Yeah.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
You repeat yourself, Katie.
Okay, that's fine. So then Willem Dafoe comes out, and you're not supposed to think you're going to see Willem Dafoe in Aquaman. He comes out, and the man behind me just goes, oh, shoot. And, I mean, I felt the same way. I think the entire theater felt the same way. That was the only way to correctly respond. But, so that was fun. There's a lot of sexism. There's just a random woman. I'm not exactly sure what she's a princess. But she just, like, shows up and she knows Aquaman and you're not really sure how they know each other. And she's just in as tight clothes as they could possibly fit on her. Kind of like Catwoman suit.
Ooh, yeah.
But green and mermaidy.
Ooh.
And so her purpose in the movie is basically just to become his love interest.
So just some sex appeal.
Let's just throw in some objectification of women over sexualization.
To get the teenage crowd in here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's,
that's
sad. And
I mean, to be fair, the reason I went is to objectify Jason Momoa. Is that his name?
Jason Moana.
That's the name. Thank you, Clark.
Of course.
Yeah. But anyway, they tried really hard to be funny, and it wasn't really funny. It just was kind of awkward. I think the thing I like more about Marvel than I do DC is there's always some sort of theme, some sort of running,
like the power of friendship, or
yeah, there's like a morality thing. It's for children, right? So there's some sort of, sure. And there's opportunity then for like the lightheartedness,
yeah,
of a Marvel movie that you see, like Thor Ragnarok or something like that. But then in DC, the comics are a lot darker, so it's a lot harder to make that a genuine trade off between a nice little moral, wholesome meaning, and then also some humor.
Sure.
It's harder to do that, and it's just also not done as well. There's also just so much sexism in the DC universe. But anyway, I digress.
Speaking of movies that have things that don't quite seem like they belong, I watched The Sixth Sense recently, which is Midnight Shyamalan's
Midnight Shyamalan. I love him.
What a boy. Mm-hmm. It's one of his good movies. He had that string of like four good movies.
I'm a big fan of Midnight Shyamalan. Okay. But I mean, it is mostly his better ones. But
yeah,
just the way that
his good movies are good and his bad movies are oh so bad.
But they're kind of fun bad.
Sure. You can watch them and play bingo as you go through it. Like
I played bingo yesterday.
Good. I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
We're all making progress here. Mm-hmm. But I watched The Sixth Sense with my wife, Abby, and it's a thriller, supernatural horror movie about this kid who can see dead people. We all know that quote. And most of us know how the movie ends, but we're not going to spoil it because Logoria is a largely spoiler-free podcast. But it's not really an emotional movie. It's pretty intense, and there's some bonding between a child psychologist and a child, but Abby wept for about an hour.
I was going to say, you say it's not emotional, but the first time I watched it, I too wept a lot.
A lot. Like, how much are we talking here?
I mean, the first time I watched it, I was in, like, elementary school, so I can't tell you for sure, but it really, it did not pull punches. Is that the phrase?
Sure. So I think I get the emotional appeal, especially between, I don't remember what the child actor's name is, but him.
Hayden, oh, I should know.
It's not Hayden Christensen.
No, it's not.
The Phantom Menace.
Hayden, it's like three different names. Oh, it might end with Hayden. Oh, I don't know. When I was a child, I said he was my favorite actor because he's in one of my favorite movies called Pay It Forward.
Okay. I think I get that emotional appeal between Hayden, whatever, and Bruce Willis. But what Abby was weeping about was Bruce Willis and his wife.
Oh, well, there's that too. There's also the kid and his mom.
Sure. There are a lot of good connections. It's just a movie that I might tear up at, but it was just a long weep session. So, I don't know. It just struck me.
And maybe you're heartless, Clark.
Not quite heartless, but the blood never seems to reach my toes or fingers when it's cold out. So I think I do have a smaller heart, or perhaps just a larger frame.
I think it's the larger frame. I would actually like to disclaim Clark does indeed have a heart.
Oh, thank you, Katie.
Feel bad now for our viewers, listeners.
Our viewers.
Yeah.
It's a better term than listeners.
You're right.
What TV show would you like to talk about today?
Oh, Katie? I'm going to talk about Elite, which is a show I watched right after the semester ended last semester. It was the day before I left my dorm to drive back home. And I started the first episode. It is a Spanish TV show. It's kind of like a better Riverdale.
That's so difficult to have a better Riverdale.
Okay, Clark. Oh, gosh. Well, it has sort of that mystery high school vibe of Riverdale. But it has all the seriousness of, like, an actual show where people are dying.
Sure.
Which, like, Riverdale doesn't really seem to have. And you learn, it's a nonlinear show, so you learn that somebody has died, but you're going back in time consistently between them figuring out who has died and trying to figure out who has done it while you're going back and seeing like the beginning of their semester altogether. It deals with a lot of different things. Deals with religion. Deals with socioeconomic differences. Three students are given a scholarship to go to an elite school, hence the name Elite. Yes, but my Netflix suggested it to me in French because it knows I speak French. So I was very confused at first why they were in Spain, why they looked Spanish. I was very confused. I was like, the words aren't syncing up to what they're saying. But I figured it out eventually. But yeah, watched it, binge watched it all in one night, stayed up until 5 in the morning to finish it because incredible. I loved it that much. Yeah, good. It's a very good show. And I have actually watched the full show since then at least 4 or 5 times.
Wow.
I would highly recommend. Very intriguing. A lot of suspense. Deals with a lot of these issues in a very real way. All of the characters, which I've noticed in sort of European film, none of them are perfect, but they all seem to have sort of redeeming qualities. It humanizes everyone, but doesn't excuse their heinous acts sure. either. So
and that's tough for a television show to do, but that's really cool.
Yeah.
The show that I want to talk about is not one with really redeemable characters.
Oh, good.
It's a farce / black comedy would probably be the best way to classify it. It's Todd Margaret. It was originally called The Increasingly Poor Decisions of Todd Margaret. And it stars David Cross from Arrested Development, who plays Tobias.
Right, yeah.
And he is...
And a black comedy.
Yes.
I'm surprised.
Yes, which he pulls off very well. It also stars Sharon Horgan, who I talked about in Catastrophe in last week's episode, and a few other noticeable people. Will Arnett is sort of a minor character that keeps coming up throughout the show.
So is it just the entire cast of Arrested Development?
I've noticed that where there is one member of the Arrested Development cast, others are bound to be there.
Definitely. Is Michael... The real question I'm asking, is Michael Cera in it?
He's not. Which is so sad to me.
Disappointing.
As far as I can remember. Now, here's the thing. I'm watching through this show for the third time.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it once with Seth Horton, my roommate, I think my freshman or sophomore year. And then I watched it once with my little brother, Isaac, who designed our logo for the show. Shout out to Isaac Hubbard. So this is my third time. I might have forgotten if Michael Cera's in there. I will update you once I finish the show with Abby.
Perfect.
Here's the premise.
Mm-hmm.
A really weak salesperson at a company in America accidentally gets mistaken for somebody who's a real go-getter by Will Arnett, his boss. And he sends him to London to sell an energy drink. It's called Thunder Muscle. And through a whole lot of just... really, really bad plot twists. Things go very poorly for Todd Margaret, who's played by David Cross. It's ridiculous. Things go from pretty okay to awful at the end of the first season to worse at the end of the second season to the worst that they could possibly be at the end of the third season. And it's like a very long improv skit where it just keeps building, and every episode you are wondering how the heck is this going to keep going. It's so funny. Just a very good show, and one that can make you feel a lot of things.
Wow. This is a bit of a detour from what you're saying, but you said Todd Margaret, and it reminded me actually of a project that Clark and I are working on called Todd. About...
Wait, hold on. Should we save that for the end of the episode so they have to listen?
Should we? I was just going to say that I think Michael Cera should play Robert. And we can explain what that means at the end.
Yes. Michael, if you're listening to this, we do want you to play
please,
Robert.
Please.
We would like this very much.
Yeah, but you have to wait until the end of the episode for that little nugget of funness.
That's right, Michael. You just have to wait.
Yeah.
Katie, what mm-hmm. music would you like to talk about?
Oh, I would
episode?
Love to talk about one specific song by Billie Eilish.
Eyelashes.
Billie Eyelashes. Oh, it's the last song I was listening to, actually. I don't know if you're familiar with Billie Eilish, but her music is pretty chill. It's like nice to listen to while you're studying. Ocean Eyes, beautiful song, love that. Very fun, and I'd say generally like wholesome. But there's then this song.
There's also some dark Billie Eilish, and this is a continuation of that.
Yeah, so this is where we're going.
Billie. What do you want from me? Why don't you run from me? What are you wondering? What do you know? Why aren't you scared of me? Why do you care for me? When we all fall asleep, where do we go? Come here. Say it, spit it out. What is it exactly? You're playing.
So that's just a taste of Bury a Friend by Billie Eilish. Also, just the name in general is a little dark. The cover art is actually kind of terrifying. When I listen to the song, I both feel scared for my life, but also a lot of peace. So that's an interesting dichotomy. But yeah, it's a very interesting song. It has like a lot of dark themes, but there's also something very hypnotic about it that makes you want to go back and keep listening to it.
Absolutely. I've listened to Billie Eilish for probably a year, maybe a little longer, and she's grown a lot through that period. I get these sort of Lorde vibes from her.
Yeah.
She has a lot more music coming out. Just the voice and some of the songs, the way she does the songs. Also, her come up story is very similar. Just a very young artist mm-hmm. who, with a single other person, has just been releasing some excellent pop music.
Yeah. That's, I think, a good comparison.
Thank you so much, Katie.
You're welcome.
All right. So the song that I chose today is called Easier to Love. It's by Kississippi on the album Sunset Blush.
I'm sorry. Could you say that again?
Kississippi, Kississippi.
Wasn't that like a children's chant rhyme thing when we were children?
Oh, it definitely was. How did it go?
I don't know.
Come on, Katie, sing it for us.
I couldn't tell you.
I just have a metronome.
No, I just have nostalgia when you say that. Or maybe I'm thinking of, no, I don't know. I feel like it must have been.
There was definitely a mocking chant that was like, 1, 2, Kississippi, 3,
yeah.
kiss.
There
something
it is.
Like that.
That's what it is.
That was probably exactly it. Kississippi's awesome. I first found her because she was the girlfriend, is now the fiance of one of the main artists from Prince Daddy and the Hyena, which is an emo band that I really like.
You like emo bands, of course.
You know I do.
Okay.
You know I do. We've talked about this before. Don't pretend like you're surprised.
Okay,
this,
I'm
Katie.
Sorry.
It's okay. This is not emo, though. So I'm going to play this. I'll fade it in because we're a professional podcast. What are your first impressions of that, Katie?
My first impressions is I really like the background soprano vocals going on. Love that.
Goodness.
I'm also, you know, it's just nice to have somebody from our 51st state, Kississippi, representing.
Yeah.
That's always
so
nice.
I'm so excited to see the new flag with that 51st yes. star somewhere in there.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be exciting.
Yeah, it will be. And also the Kississippi state flag, which, as you know, is just a lip print.
Yeah, mm-hmm. just a red lip print on a mm-hmm. white flag.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Very simplistic, mm-hmm. very modern.
Very modern. I love it.
I like it a lot. But mm-hmm. that is Kississippi. That song is Easier to Love off of, I believe, her newest album, Sunset Blush. Mm-hmm. She has lots of different vibes throughout all of her songs. Definitely recommend taking a listen to that album. It's only 32 minutes long, so it's a pretty fast listen.
Yeah, pretty short listen.
And it's got a lot of good song, good, not good songs, good songs on it.
Mm-hmm.
Katie,
mm-hmm.
since it's just us two, I thought...
Yes.
For dessert.
I'm very excited for this part.
This is dessert. Since
this is dessert.
There's just two of us.
Yummy, yummy.
We just had a 3-course meal.
Yum,
here's
yum,
the creme
yum.
Brulee. Mm. It's been freshly flame-throwed, as they do with creme brulee.
Love that.
Here it is. Let's talk about what we've been reading.
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of poetry, and I have a current favorite. Well, not my favorite poet, because as we all know, Emily Dickinson is my best friend in the entire world.
We do know that.
Yes.
We know how you have the occasional seance just to bring her back and talk to her just for a couple minutes every Wednesday.
You know, we didn't all know that. That was something I told you in confidence, Clark. But whatever, fine. The whole world can know. So this is Sam Sachs. He's a queer Jewish poet. Writes a lot about his identity. And the identity of people who have come before him. Just a lot of really interesting themes. Talks about mental illness a lot.
How did you discover Sam Sachs?
I was actually in your apartment. And I was hanging out with... I don't know who I was hanging out with in your apartment. But I looked down and I found a poetry book. Said, I'm going to flip through that. Flip through it. And I actually found... this poem, and I...
Yeah, was it Joel's Poetry Magazine? I think it might have been.
Okay. It was, and I left him a kind little note because I'm a good friend. And this is the first line, which got me to read it. So I'm going to read the first line first, and then I'm going to talk about it. It's called Prayer for the Mutilated World, and the first line is, what will be left after the last fidget spinner spun its last spin? And when I read that, I thought, this poem... is going to be terrible.
Oh, it's going to be the worst,
yeah.
most
and
garbage
I thought,
poem.
I have to read this just because it's about fidget spinners. And so I did, and I was surprised because I was expecting it to be terrible, and it was actually an incredible poem.
A really, really solid piece.
Yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and just read the poem for us.
Absolutely.
So this is Prayer for a Mutilated World by Sam Sachs. What will be left after the last fidget spinner spun its last spin? After the billboards accrue their thick layer of grit masking advertisements for teeth paste and Tanqueray gin? After the highways are overtaken by invasive forests? After the ministers give up their gods and their rabbis their congregations for drink? After new men rise to lead us sheep toward our shearing? To make bed sheets from our hair. After the high towers have no airplanes to warn away and instead blink purely toward heaven like children with one red eye. After phone lines do nothing but cut the sky into sheet music and our phones are just expensive bricks of metal and glass. After a cloud of photographs collapses and all memories retreat back into their privatized skulls. After the water taps gasp out their final blessing, what then? When even the local militias run out of ammunition, when the blast radii have been chalked and the missiles do all they were built to, when us Jews have given up our state for that much older country of walking and then that even older religion of dirt, when all have succumbed to illness inside the church of our gutted pharmacies, when the seas eat their cities, when the ground splits like a dress, when the trash continent in the mid-Atlantic at last opens its mouth to spit, what will be left after we've left? I dare not consider it. Instead, dance with me a moment, late in this last extinction. That you are reading this must be enough. Yeah. Amazing poet. I got two of his poetry books for Christmas. I would highly recommend both of them. They're called Madness. The other one is Bury It. Madness is, I've completely finished Madness. Has a lot of themes about mental illness, what it means to be Jewish, what it means to be gay, those things together. Very emotional, but just packed with A lot of beautiful writing, but in very modern ways that still maintain a lot of beautiful structural qualities, which something sometimes can be wanting in a lot of modern poetry.
Absolutely.
Not a huge fan of a lot of modern poetry, but Sam Sachs is really impressive, I think.
Awesome. Very cool. One of the things that I have been reading and sort of rereading is a collection of short stories by my favorite author, David Foster Wallace.
And is that your favorite author, Clark?
Katie, don't do this right now.
Okay.
We've talked about this before on the show, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But this is his last collection of short stories that he published before he passed. It's called Oblivion. And there's a piece, it's almost flash fiction. It may be a short story, but it's just about two pages. It's called Incarnations of Burned Children, and it's one of his better-known short stories. I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but I figured I'd start with the first couple paragraphs just so you get a general sense of the language that he's able to use and the story as it begins to unfold. So this is the first little bit of Incarnations of Burned Children. The daddy was around the side of the house, hanging a door for the tenant, when he heard the child's screams and the mommy's voice gone high between them. He could move fast, and the back porch gave onto the kitchen, and before the screen door had banged shut behind him, the daddy had taken the scene in whole, the overturned pot on the floor tile before the stove, and the burner's blue jet, and the floor's pool of water still steaming as its many arms extended, the toddler in his baggy diaper, standing rigid with steam coming off his hair and his chest and shoulders scarlet, and his eyes rolled up and mouth open very wide and seeming somehow separate from the sounds that issued, the mommy down on one knee with the dish rag dabbing pointlessly at him and matching the screams with cries of her own, hysterical, so she was almost frozen. And that's probably 20% of the story. Mm-hmm. It is very short, but it does everything that a short story should do. And it's also just a very difficult short story to read, sort of about failures of parents. And it just shows his style really well. That second sentence that I read was half a page long.
Yeah.
And he's able to just keep sentences going without it seeming like a freshman rambling in Comp 101 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a very impressive author. So you can find that short story online, just as you can with a lot of Sachs's poetry. So yeah, we would definitely recommend you do that.
Yeah, definitely would.
Katie?
Yes,
let's talk Clark. About Michael and Robert.
Let's talk about it. So this is actually a nice segue. Yesterday, your wife sent me a message on Instagram that said, can I be MLT? Or no, MTL. And I thought for the life of me, what is MTL? What does that stand for? What does it mean?
Megatron laxative.
I looked it up and it said Montreal. And I said, what? Why does she want to be?
Of course you can be Montreal.
Why does she want to be not Montreal? And I said, Abby, I'm so sorry. I don't understand. And she said, can I be Mary Todd Lincoln? And I thought, oh my goodness. Yes, of course. Of course. Of course you can be Mary Todd Lincoln. And that's because Clark and I are writing a script, a screenplay.
We are. It's called Todd.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's its starting title. We want to sort of riff off of Daniel Day-Lewis's big movie Lincoln, because Mary Todd Lincoln was born Mary Ann Todd, and she lived an absolutely wild life, especially
crazy.
Post-1865 and the death of her husband.
Yes. Which is where we want the movie to begin.
Absolutely.
Yes.
What inspired us, Katie, to start on this project?
Yeah, we were sitting in some ice cream place.
Yes,
and
we
were
Maggie
telling
Moos.
Me about this autobiography you were reading about Mary Todd Lincoln's life. And
just a biography.
Yes, right. An autobiography, I wish. And just some of the wild things that she did and experienced. And
yeah, I think I found her Wikipedia page somehow and was like, I'm going to get this biography.
Yes. Yeah. And so then we decided it would be a great movie, and then just came up with some random funny ideas for like a black comedy. And we were like, actually, this would be a great movie. So we've started kind of just working on it as a fun thing. One of the things is that she has this really interesting relationship with her son, Robert. Robert Lincoln is a lawyer, and he kind of takes advantage of his mother at a few points. They don't have a great relationship. At one point later in life, she says that I can finally live in peace because I'm no longer tormented by a demon, in reference to her son, Robert, because she finally, they like cut off communication and, et cetera. But, she gets sent to an asylum, tries to break out of the asylum.
Eventually does escape through legal means.
Yes. Yeah. But, does some crazy things to get to that point.
Absolutely. One of the things that we want to do, Mary Todd Lincoln is known for, I guess the perception of her is that she's unstable, that she's mentally ill. And this is true in a lot of ways, which is understandable considering three of her four children died. She was next to her husband as he was assassinated, and she lived during the 1800s. So all those things are
as
very
depressing. As a woman during the 1800s, yes.
Lest we forget. But one of the things that Katie and I are really hoping to do in this screenplay is to show her humanity through this whole thing, to show that she was a brilliant woman who did a lot of really great things and is often maligned in history books or just by people who may not know everything about her. So we're hoping to shed some light on some things that aren't as publicly known.
Yeah. Yeah. And also sort of look at like the humor and some of the wilder things that have happened. But along with that, looking at the humor and her lucid moments and how lucid she really was, despite everyone saying that she's crazy and mad. And just because you respond to grief in a certain way doesn't make you crazy. And what exactly that looks like, what exactly that means.
Absolutely. Well, Katie, do you have any final thoughts for our viewers?
I have a fun little movie to talk about that's coming out.
Okay.
I'm not sure if any of you are familiar with the Norwegian black death metal scene. Anyone? No?
Show of hands? Nobody?
Nobody? Ah, well, I have been every once in a while, and there's actually a movie called Lords of Chaos that is out in select theaters right now by Vice, I believe, and it's about the drama of this. There's a lot going on. There's a lot of, church arsonry. Makeup, kind of like in Kiss. There's a lot of that. There's a lot of death. Sometimes a little murder.
Just a tad.
Just a little bit.
Just a little sprinkling just of murder to spice up the Norwegian metal scene.
Yeah. A crazy, crazy story. So I'm excited to try to get to see that at some point. That's what I'm excited for coming up in the future.
Absolutely. That sounds like a lot of fun. Well, thank you everybody so much for listening to the Loggeria podcast, the arts and entertainment podcast where we word vomit about music, movies, TV shows, and sometimes when we're very good and we've behaved ourselves, just a little bit of reading to spice things up. You can find us on Twitter at Loggeria_pod. That's LOGRRHEA_POD. You can't find us on Facebook or MySpace or Instagram or LinkedIn or anywhere else. But Twitter, if you've got anything that you'd like to talk about, DM us on Twitter.
Yeah, tweet us the word spunk and you'll get a special Loggeria t-shirt. Only today.
Only today. That is February 20th, 3 days before this episode is released. Yes. If you tweet spunk to us, we will give you a free Loggeria t-shirt.
And if you tweet it to us in 3 days, who knows, maybe...
We might give you a hug.
We'll give you a hug.
A very warm hug.
A lot of spunk in that hug.
A lot of spunk. It's a spunky hug.
Yeah.
Thank you all so much, and we hope you have a very good night. We love you all very much. Bye.
Bye. Do, 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 do. Loggeria.